Good afternoon, everyone. Good to see so many here on this beautiful day. Sherry and I were sitting out on our patio this morning saying, wow, you know, this is really nice. But we came anyway. Just one quick announcement before I get started. Rather than try to relay this to Warren, who is older than I am, by the way. Decided to do it myself. We would like prayers for my wife Sherry. Again, 18 months ago, Sherry had a heart attack. For those who are new or don't know this, and she had a triple bypass operation and then a mitral valve replacement, and then as a result of the operation, as a complication, had a stroke. So it was a rather lengthy recovery, and she's doing great. She feels fine. But we had a trip to the cardiologist just as a one-year checkup, and did a stress test, and they determined that she possibly has some blockage in another part of her heart. So we're going to go in and have I'll go with her. It's going to have an angiogram, which is a test that will reveal exactly what's going on. So we would really appreciate your prayers that this test just shows that everything's okay. What they're saying is that, there's a possibility they may have to do, an angioplasty, which is where they run a gizmo up into your heart and expand things and open things up and so forth. But Sherry would rather not do any of that. She would rather have God heal her, and God has healed her in the past. And so even though we know we're going to get dropped off the eagle's wings again, we still don't want to do it. So this afternoon, I'm going to be reviewing the March Bible reading program. And I had a little short talk with David beforehand, and I said, take the time you need. I either need 2 weeks or I'll just use what I have, because we'll be covering Daniel 4 through 9. And hopefully you pick up the Bible reading program, because there's so much in it that it has a running commentary that goes through with the scriptures that are being read that day. And there's a wealth of information in there. It is a commentary. It's a commentary. It's not the inspired word of God. And they give a lot of different points of view and different ways to take different things and so forth. But we'll be starting in Daniel 4. And because of the time we are in, the Passover is tomorrow night. I try to make this as relevant as possible. Starting in Daniel 4, this is Nebuchadnezzar's dream. Just start in verse 1. It says, Nebuchadnezzar the king, unto all people, nations, and languages that dwell in all the earth, peace be multiplied unto you. So it's interesting that here's a Gentile leader whose words are in the Bible, because he was taught an extremely important lesson that we all need to learn. Going on to verse 2, I thought it good to show the signs and wonders that the high God has wrought toward me. How great are his signs, how mighty are his wonders. His kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and his dominion is from generation to generation. So he was taught an important lesson through what was going to happen to him. His dream was that this great tree was cut down, but the stump was left. And then later on, it sprang back up. And this was talking about Nebuchadnezzar himself, that his kingdom, or that he himself, would be made to be like a wild animal, that Apparently the spirit in man was taken away from him, and he lost his intellect and was driven from men and lived like an animal for 7 years. And then his sanity came back to him. And we'll go into that a little more, but in verse 17, just running through according to the way it's written, he says, "This matter is by decree of the watchers and the demand of the word of the holy ones, to the intent," and here's the intent, "that the living, us, may know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men and gives it to whoever he will and sets up over it the basest of men." So the intent is that so we know. And then dropping down to verse 35, this is after his sanity came back to him. It says, "And all the inhabitants of the earth are reputed as nothing. And he does according to his will in the army of heaven and among the inhabitants of the earth. And none can stay his hand or say unto him, 'What are you doing?'" Because Nebuchadnezzar, being the ruler of Babylon, came to the point that he thought he could do whatever he wanted to do. And he learned this lesson. Verse 36, "At the same time, my reason returned to me, and for the glory of my kingdom, my honor and brightness returned to me, and my counselors and my lords sought unto me, and I was established in my kingdom, and excellent majesty was added unto me." And then notice verse 37. "Now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and extol and honor the King of heaven, all whose works are true and his ways judgment, that those who walk in pride he is able to abase." And that is the main lesson for us at this time, is that those who walk in pride he is able to abase. You know, we're told that there are several things that God hates. It's interesting to study, when you study about God, to study what God loves, what the Bible plainly says that he loves, and also what it plainly says that he hates. And one of the things that God hates is pride. He says he hates a proud look. So this is a major lesson that Nebuchadnezzar learned, was that those who walk in pride, God is able to abase, and that we need to give glory to God, who gives us what we have. Then in chapter 5, this talks about the handwriting on the wall. And obviously, in reading through this, we'll see that Nebuchadnezzar's son didn't learn the lesson that his father learned. This was during the time that the Babylonian Empire was going to be overthrown. And what happened was Belshazzar, who was the king after Nebuchadnezzar, was going to throw a feast. It was actually at the time that the armies had surrounded Babylon, the city of Babylon, but it was so fortified that the inhabitants thought, well, this isn't a problem. You know, we have these great walls, we have years' worth of provisions. You know, they can just knock themselves out trying to get in, and they're not going to have any success. So he threw this big party. And unbeknownst to him, what was happening when he threw this party was the armies of Cyrus were diverting the Euphrates River, which ran through the city. And they had these big iron gates that came down, you know, partway into the water. But once the river was diverted and the water level went down, they walked right in under the gates, and then they had gates along the river as well, but those gates were unlocked. And while they were having this big party, the soldiers came on in and took the city. But while he was at this feast, something very, very strange happened, and that was a hand, just a hand itself, wrote something on the wall. And that's where we get the saying, well, the handwriting's on the wall. You know? But let's start reading in verse 18 of Daniel 5. It says, O thou king, this is Daniel talking to Belshazzar because he wanted the interpretation of the dream. It says, Thou, O king, the most high God, gave Nebuchadnezzar your father a kingdom and majesty and glory and honor. And for the majesty that he gave him, all people, nations, languages, and languages trembled and feared before him, whom he would, he slew, and whom he would, he kept alive. And whom he would, he set up, and whom he would, he put down. But when his heart was lifted up, and his mind hardened in pride, he was deposed from his kingly throne, and they took his glory from him. And he was driven from the sons of men, and his heart was made like the heart of a beast, and his dwelling was with the wild asses, and they fed him with grass like oxen, and his body was wet with the dew of heaven, so he just slept outside like an animal, until he knew that the Most High God ruled in the kingdom of men, and that he appointed over it whoever he would. And you, his son, O Belshazzar, have not humbled your heart, though you knew all this. So he obviously knew this. But still, you've lifted up yourself against the Lord of heaven and have brought the vessels of his house before you, and you and your lords and wives and your concubines have drunk wine in them, and you have praised the gods of silver and gold and brass, iron, wood, and stone, which see not nor hear nor know, and the God in whose hand your breath is, and who are all your ways, has you have not glorified. So he took the golden vessels and implements of the temple that were looted out of Jerusalem and used them to serve wine and so forth in this feast. And it says, then was the part of the hand sent from him, and this writing was written. And the writing was, the words written were Mene, Mene, Tekel, Upharsin. In verse 26, it says, this is the interpretation of the thing. Mene, meaning God has numbered your kingdom and finished it. Tekel, you are weighed in the balances and found wanting. Perez, your kingdom is divided and given to the Medes and the Persians. And then verse 30 says, in that night, Belshazzar, the king of the Chaldeans, was slain. And Darius the Median took the kingdom, being about 62 years old. So here we see that he didn't learn the lesson of his father, and that God took the kingdom from him in this way. So one of the things that we need to learn is that, you know, we really need to be humble and to be meek, to understand what meekness is and to know our position, and to know, you know, where we stand. Chapter 6 is the chapter where Daniel is thrown into the lion's den. Now, we all have trials. It's very interesting. There are several lessons in here for us. You know, the new government that took over appointed Daniel as one of the counselors again, and a lot of the people in the government didn't like Daniel, so they decided to try to cook up a way to get rid of him. So it says in verse 5, then said these men, we will not find any occasion against Daniel, except we find it against him concerning the law of his God. So that's a good lesson for us. You know, we are to be above reproach, and it's good to, you know, like in our jobs or in the school or whatever, to, you know, if we're above reproach, then it's harder to, you know, say, well, you can't take that time off for the feast or things like that. I know once when we had two sons in this one school, and we went and, decided we'd go just talk to the principal. You know, we wouldn't talk to the teachers, we'd just talk to the principal. So we both went in there, and the first thing the guy said is, oh, you're both here. And then we said, we noticed in the information that you sent us that we can't take over 12 days off, or it's unexcused absence. And he said, wow, you read that stuff? And we explained what we were doing and so forth, and we were going to take actually 3.5 weeks and go to Australia. And eventually he said, you know, I'll take care of this. Just go. He said, don't worry about it. I'll talk to all the teachers, and I'll take care of it somehow. We didn't ask exactly how, but he did. But what made that happen is that our kids were good students. You know, and they said, well, you know, it's obvious by the record that they can handle this. So, you know, it really helps if what happens here in verse number 5 is a reality in our lives. That he said, we can't find any occasion against this man unless it has to do with his religion. So what they did is they basically tricked Darius into signing an edict that everyone had to bow down and worship this, you know, that no one could worship anyone but him. But so, of course, Daniel went ahead and did his prayers as he ordinarily did. So these men assembled, verse 11, and found Daniel praying and making supplications before his God. So they turned him in, and, of course, the king didn't want to throw Daniel in the lion's den. But he had to because it was the law, and you can't change the law once it was decreed. It says verse 14, then the king, when he heard these words, was sore displeased with himself and set his heart on Daniel to deliver him, and he labored until the going down of the sun to deliver him. Then these men assembled unto the king and said unto the king, know, O king, that the law of the Medes and the Persians is that no decree nor statute which the king establishes may be changed. So, you know, even though the king didn't want to throw Daniel in, he had to. So then the king commanded, and they brought Daniel and cast him into the den of lions. Now the king spoke and said unto Daniel, and this is interesting too, said unto Daniel, thy God is whom you serve continually, he will deliver you. You know, so that's interesting. Here's another Gentile king that, you know, through Daniel's example and through Daniel's wisdom and so forth, knew that God would deliver him. So going down to verse 19, they, you know, threw him in, shut him up, and then the next morning the king came back. Then the king arose very early in the morning and went in haste under the den of lions. And when he came to the den, he cried with a lamentable voice. And the king spoke and said to Daniel, O Daniel, servant of the living God, is your God, whom you serve continually, able to deliver you from the lions? Then said Daniel unto the king, O king, live forever. My God has sent his angel and has shut the lions' mouths, and they have not hurt me. For as much as before him innocency was found in me, and also before you, O king, have I done no hurt. Then was the king exceedingly glad for him, and commanded that they take Daniel up out of the den. So Daniel was taken up out of the den, and no manner of hurt was found on him, because he believed in his God. You know, and so many times it's the way it is with us. You know, we get into some circumstance that is impossible. But, you know, nothing is impossible for God. I still remember Keith Olson's sermon at The God of the Impossible, because, you know, so many times, you know, look what he did with Israel. You know, he allows them to go into a situation where, you know, the Red Sea is on one side and the Egyptian army is on the other, and it's just impossible. But yet, it works out. You know, he swoops down and saves us. There was an interesting analogy about the eagle, because we see eagles around our place, and we haven't seen that specific thing happen, but we've seen them soaring and then just fold their wings up and just plummet down, just really fast. It's like, I don't think you can drop that fast. You have to try. And it's really amazing. But here's another lesson, too. And it's what the king did now. Because so often this happens. It says, verse 24, and the king commanded, and they brought those men which had accused Daniel, and they cast them into the den of lions. Them, their children, their wives, and the lions had mastery over them and broke their bones in pieces, every one that went to the bottom of the den. And then Darius wrote unto all the people, nations, and languages that dwell in all the earth, peace be multiplied unto you. I make a decree that every dominion of my kingdom, men tremble and fear before the God of Daniel. For he is the living God and steadfast forever. And his kingdom, that which shall not be destroyed, and his dominion shall be unto the end. He delivers and rescues, and he works signs and wonders in heaven and earth, who has delivered Daniel from the power of the lions. So that was a powerful witness to him. He understood that it is God who sets up kingdoms. But so often, back in verse 24, you know, it says, if you dig a pit, you'll fall in it. And that so often happens. The same thing happened in the book of Esther, where, I can't remember the guy's name now.
Haman.
Yeah, he built a gallows to hang Mordecai on, but then he himself was hung on it. So you have to watch what traps you set. Now, Daniel chapter 7 and chapter 8 is basically, there are two different groupings of animals given, which are a history written in advance of the Gentile kingdoms of the earth. And we don't have time to go through all of that. But in chapter 7, it talks about four beasts. Starting in verse 3, the four beasts came from the sea, diverse one from another. The first was like a lion and had eagle's wings. And this is all talked about in length in the Bible reading program commentary. But the first was like a lion with eagle's wings. The second was like a bear. The third was like a leopard. And then the fourth, it says, was the fourth beast, dreadful and terrible and strong exceedingly, had great iron teeth, devoured and broke in pieces and stamped the residue with its feet. And it was diverse from all the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. And then it says, I considered the horns, and behold, there came up among them another little horn, before whom the first three horns were plucked up by the roots. And behold, this horn, there were eyes like the eyes of a man, and a mouth speaking great things. And then in chapter 8, we'll jump back and forth a little bit. Talks about another vision that Daniel had. It said, then I lifted up my eyes and saw, and behold, there stood before the river a ram which had two horns. And the two horns were high, but one was higher than the other. And the higher came up last. And I saw a ram pushing westward and northward and southward, so that no beast might stand before him, neither was there any that could deliver out of his hand. But he did according to his will and became great. And he said, when I was considering, behold, a he-goat came from the west on the face of the whole earth and touched not the ground. And the goat had a notable horn between his eyes. And he came to the ram that had two horns, which I had seen standing before the river, and ran unto him in the fury of his power. And I came close to the ram, and he was moved with anger against him, and smote the ram and broke his two horns. And there was no power in the ram to stand before him. And he cast him to the ground and stamped upon him, and there was none that could deliver the ram out of his hand. Therefore the he-goat waxed very great, and he was strong. And when he was strong, the great horn was broken. And from it came up four notable ones toward the four winds of the heaven. Let's see, it goes on down. It says, out of one of them, out of one of the four horns then, came forth a little horn which waxed exceeding great towards the north, towards the east, and towards the pleasant land. And it waxed great, even to the host of heaven. So these two visions, in it is the history of the world, clear down into the time that Jesus Christ comes. So we have the Babylonian Empire, and then the Medo-Persian Empire, and then the Alexander the Great was the notable horn. And then when he was cut off, he died at age 33, right in the height of his power, and his four generals divided his kingdom. And goes to the Roman Empire, and then the various resurrections of the Roman Empire clear down until Jesus Christ returns. And that's talked about in chapter 7 and verse 9. It says, I beheld until the thrones were cast down, and the Ancient of Days did sit, whose garment was white as snow, and the hair of his head like the pure wool. His throne was like the fiery flame, and his wheels as burning fire. A fiery stream issued and came forth from before him. Thousands ministered unto him, and 10,000 times 10,000 stood before him. The judgment was set, and the books were opened. So there are millions of angels. 10,000 times 10,000, and thousands of thousands. That's a lot. Verse 11, I beheld then, because of the voice of the great words which the horn spoke, I beheld even till the beast was slain and his body destroyed and given to the burning flame. As concerning the rest of the beasts, they had their dominion taken away, yet their lives were prolonged for a season and a time. In verse 13, I saw in the night visions, and behold, one like the Son of Man came with the clouds of heaven and came to the Ancient of Days, and they brought him near before him. And there was given him dominion and glory and a kingdom, that all people, nations, and languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion which shall not pass away, and his kingdom that which shall not be destroyed. So here's when Jesus Christ returns and his kingdom established that will never be destroyed. It's interesting, sometimes we can look at this and say, well, this is pretty basic. But to truly understand, what is happening here, and to know that in the end, God the Father's will prevail. There's nothing that can stand against it, and that Jesus Christ will return. I was working for a lady. I'm a contractor, so I'm in and out of people's homes, and sometimes I'm there quite a while. I'm kind of like the painter on, what was that, Murphy Brown? Kind of part of the family. And I was working for this lady, and I'd been there a while. And we would talk, and she knew that I was a Christian. And she actually was I don't remember what denomination, but she was a minister. She asked me, she said, do you believe Jesus will return? And I said, it's one of those times when you go, okay, I'm supposed to be able to do this, So I said, well, and I basically went through the image of Daniel. I said, well, in Daniel, the great image, I said, it shows that, the progression of the kingdoms. And then at the end, when you know, at the time of the 10 toes, you know, the image, the stone cut without hands, you know, which is Jesus Christ, you know, smites the image on the feet, and the whole of man's society is crumbles. And I said, you know, that's, you know, when the kingdom is set up and Jesus Christ returns. And it really impacted her. I mean, she, you know, she had tears in her eyes, and she said, wow, you know, I thought I was the only one. I, you know, I assured her she wasn't. But it's really, it's good when we can do things like that. It's interesting in the, you know, talking about the Roman Empire, you know, between Daniel and between Revelation, you know, it talks about having a name of blasphemy written on her forehead. And it's interesting, when you look up the word blasphemy, it's either applying evil attributes to God or taking God's holiness away, one of those. And, you know, the very name, Holy Roman Empire, is a blasphemous name. You know, there's nothing holy about the Roman Empire. So it has that blasphemous name. So we need to move on. We move on to Daniel 9. And what we'll cover here is the 70 weeks prophecy, because it's nice that we're here at this time of year, because let's turn to I guess it's in here, okay. See, when Jesus came, the people were looking for the Messiah. In Luke 3 and verse 15, let's just turn over there real quickly. It says they were in expectation. One of the downsides of having a real Bible, you actually have to turn there. This is when John the Baptist was preaching during his ministry. In verse 15 it says, "And as the people were in expectation, and all men mused in their hearts of John, whether he were the Christ or not." So people knew from this 70 weeks prophecy that it was time for the Messiah. So we'll go through this prophecy real quick here. In Daniel 9 and starting in verse 20, Daniel was praying to God, and in verse 20 is right at the last. He says, "And while I was speaking and praying and confessing my sin and the sin of my people Israel and presenting my supplication before the Lord my God for the holy mountain of my God, yea, while I was speaking in prayer, even the man Gabriel, whom I had seen in the vision at the beginning, had caused to fly swiftly, touching me about the time of the evening oblation, and informed me and talked with me and said, O Daniel, I am now come for to give you skill and understanding. At the beginning of your supplications, the commandment came forth, and I came to show you, for you are greatly beloved. Therefore understand the matter and consider the vision." Then verse 24, 70 weeks are determined upon thy people and upon thy holy city to finish the transgression and to make an end of sins and to make reconciliation for iniquity and to bring in everlasting righteousness and to seal up the vision and prophecy and to anoint the most holy. Know therefore and understand that from the going forth of the commandment to restore and build Jerusalem unto the Messiah the Prince shall be 7 weeks and 62 weeks. And the street shall be built again in the wall, even in troublous times. And after 62 weeks shall Messiah be cut off, but not for himself. And that could be rendered, it's not for himself, but not... It's like he's not cut off because of himself. He's cut off for us. And the people of the prince that shall come shall destroy the city and the sanctuary, and the end thereof shall be with a flood. And unto the end of the war, desolations are determined. And he shall confirm the covenant with many for 1 week. And in the midst of the week, he shall cause the sacrifice and the oblation to cease. And for the overspreading of abominations, he shall make it desolate, even until the consummation. And that determined shall be poured upon the desolate. So I'm going to read a little bit from the commentary in the lesson itself, which will summarize this. It says, if then the decree in 457 granted to Ezra himself is taken as the commencement of the 69 heptads, and that's weeks, or 483 years, we come out to the precise year of the appearance of Jesus of Nazareth as Messiah. 483 minus 457 comes out to AD 26. But since a year is gained in passing from 1 BC to 1 AD, it actually comes out to AD 27. It is generally agreed that Christ was crucified in or around AD 30 after a ministry of a little more than 3 years, or more accurately, in the spring of AD 31 after a 3.5-year ministry. This means his baptism and initial ministry must have taken place in autumn of AD 27, a most remarkable exactitude in the fulfillment of such an ancient prophecy. Only God could have predicted the coming of his son with such amazing precision as it defies all rationalistic explanation. So that's why they were in expectation, is because they knew from history when these edicts were, and they knew of this prophecy, so they were looking for the Messiah at that time. Now there's more to this prophecy, and there's a lot said about it in the lesson. So I'm not going to take the time for that, but being tomorrow is Passover, it's very interesting to see that this prophecy was given to Daniel that foretold of the first coming of Jesus Christ. Of course, the Jews were expecting, the restoration of Israel at that time. So many of them rejected him at that time because that didn't happen. It's very interesting through these chapters of Daniel, that we see a panorama of all of human history from that time till now, of what would take place, and that God does intervene and is in control. He obviously allows a lot to happen, but ultimately, his goal is to bring many sons to glory, and that the saints would have the kingdom. These things were written that the living may know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men. God the Father is spoken of as the Ancient of Days and Jesus Christ. And it's just an amazing, amazing thing that they were willing to do this, so that from the foundation of the earth, it was all planned this way, that Jesus would come and die, so that we could have life. It's like David Holliday said, quite some time ago, if that doesn't do it, then you're kind of beyond help. So that's what is covered in this Bible reading program lesson. After David was done, I kind of thought, I don't really need to say anything, but It is an amazing time of year. It's a time of reflection, but it's not really a time to beat ourselves up, because when it says to examine ourselves, it says to examine yourself whether you are in the faith, you know. And we are in the faith. And I hope you all have a very fulfilling Passover season, very meaningful. We're going to be over in Squim, so we'll see you back on the first holy day.